Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday, it's April 24th. 46 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City with partly sunny skies. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Giboy. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy Wednesday to you. We are halfway through the work week, and today we'll build off of what we've seen over recent days when it comes to the weather across the Wasatch Back. And if you've enjoyed the weather the last few days, you'll enjoy today. But I also want to make sure that you enjoy today, because we do have changes that will be arriving by tomorrow. So if you've enjoyed this lovely spring weather, make sure that you get outside and enjoy it. Today we'll check in with mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies, with that temperature returning to the middle 60s for a daytime high, while we come in right around 70 degrees in Heber. So we'll go with the daytime high of 64 in Park City. There will be at least a slight chance that we could see a few spotty showers and maybe even a few rumbles of thunder, but that's been the case the last couple of days. So if I had to put a percentage on it, roughly a 20% chance, not all that high, but can't be completely discounted. Then by tonight, we're looking at partly cloudy skies with the overnight lows falling back to around 40 degrees. And then the big changes, they start to arrive as we go throughout the day on Thursday. We've got two systems set to move in. The first one comes in tomorrow. The second one will be arriving as we go from Friday into Saturday. So for our Thursday, we'll be looking at an increasing chance of wet weather as we go from the morning into the afternoon. It'll be cooler compared to what we find today, with the daytime high coming in the upper 50s with a 70% chance for showers by the afternoon. And there will also be the potential for a few thunderstorms as well. We're going to hold on to a pretty decent chance for showers as we go into Thursday night, with the overnight low dropping to the upper 30s. So it's more likely than not that through the Wasatch Back, we're mainly going to stick with mainly rain showers from Thursday into Thursday night. Maybe we could see a wintry mix or even some snow in Park City. But by Friday afternoon, with that second system moving in, we're looking at a pretty good chance of seeing rain right around 90% with a daytime high of 44 degrees. And then on Friday night, with the overnight low dropping close to freezing, there is a chance that we could see that rain become snow. And we'll be looking at a chance of rain and snow showers on Saturday with an 80% chance, with the daytime high once again coming in at 44 degrees, which is below our seasonal average. We'll hold on to a chance for some lingering showers through Saturday night into Sunday, but I'm thinking throughout the day on Sunday, that chance will gradually go down as our temperatures will begin to climb. But once again, we should be back in the upper 40s by Sunday with roughly a 30% chance of showers. And then through the first half of next week, high pressure will be the main controlling factor in our weather. Maybe still a little bit of moisture present, but I'm thinking Monday into Tuesday will mainly bring mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies. And we'll be back in the mid to upper 50s on Monday, and there's a chance that we're right around 60 degrees by Tuesday. So I'd say that we're at the top of the Utah spring weather roller coaster today. We're going to be dropping for our Thursday into Friday, and then we'll start climbing once again into early next week, Leslie.
Okay, Thomas, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Park City Ski and Snowboard Program Director Adam Loomis, recounting his win in the 100-kilometer Gorge Waterfalls running race. Then Park City Manager Matt Dye is previewing this week's City Council meeting, including a preview of next year's operating budget. Finally, Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang with a preview of some of their upcoming screenings. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include Dr. Carrie Jaworski, a sports medicine physician at Intermountain Park City Hospital Sports Performance Center. A speaker series begins Tuesday, April 30th at 6 o'clock at the Blair Education Center, focusing on helping young female athletes thrive. Then local resident Amy McDonald is the founder and director of Brawley Arch. She discusses how a movement called Illusion of Abundance can expose a climate and culture in crisis due to the declining Great Salt Lake. All of that coming up during The Mountain Life, of course, and The Mountain Life heard every Wednesday between 9 and 10. Taking a look at some local news now, the Park City School District is updating the way it teaches early elementary students to read. KPCW's Christine Weller reports.
About 60% of third graders in the Park City School District were reading at grade level by the end of the 2022 to 2023 school year. That's according to Stacy Briggs, the student's teaching and learning director. She said that's compared to 46% statewide. Just under 80% of the district students in kindergarten to third grade were on track to reach grade level standards. But the Park City School District says it's not enough. The goal is to have 90% of third graders reach reading proficiency by 2028. So, the district is updating its teaching materials to the 2023 English Language Arts Standards. The current curriculum was adopted in 2016. The new materials focus on decoding and language comprehension to ensure students understand what they read. Katie McGinn is the district's English Language Arts Literacy Specialist. She said decoding is when kids look for sound syllables to identify words.
Short vowels, long vowels, closed syllables. putting that all together to read words and spell words.
To help students decode, the district has proposed the 95% Groups Literacy Program, focusing on word recognition through phonics.
We're excited because it will allow us to personalize so that each student is making the progress needed to be successful readers.
For language comprehension, the district will use a program called Wit and Wisdom with lessons on vocabulary, syntax, language structure, background knowledge, and verbal reasoning. Briggs said both programs help teachers monitor students' literacy progress and allow for adjustments as needed. Both also support students who learned English as a second language. These programs will be in addition to the existing specialized instruction for all ESL students. Parents can provide feedback on the new literacy programs through a survey until May 10th. The district will also host webinars for the community to learn about the changes April 23rd and April 30th. More information is available at kpcw.org. Christine Waller, KPCW News.
Well, Park City's Adam Loomis finished first in the 100-kilometer running race known as the Gorge Waterfalls. It took place at Oregon's Columbia River Gorge April 13th. He joins me now in the studio to talk about this amazing accomplishments. Good morning, congratulations.
Thank you, Leslie. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So 100 kilometers is what, about 62 miles? Is that?
Yep, exactly.
So that's more than two marathons.
Yeah, that's one way to think about it.
How long did it take you?
It took me just under 8 hours and 45 minutes.
All right. And then what does that mean in terms of how fast per mile is what you usually look at?
Yeah, so it broke down to, I think, about 8:25 a mile. So it was a relatively quick race compared to some of the more mountainous races I've done.
So you've done 100 kilometers before?
I actually haven't. I mean, I've ran 100 kilometers, but I haven't done a 100-kilometer race. I've done finished 100-mile race, ran 100 kilometers a couple other times, and then a few 50-mile races. So this seemed like it would be pretty similar.
Yeah, and it may make a big difference for you training at 7,000 feet and then running down, what, at maybe less than 1,000 feet?
Yeah, it's definitely nice, especially with the extra speed that race had, just to have some extra oxygen. It made those faster miles feel pretty good.
Yeah, the pictures you sent are absolutely gorgeous. So yeah. You're running mostly just, what, through forest? I mean, really mossy and...
Yeah, it was incredible scenery. We ran through, like you said, lush forests, some pretty technical rocky trails. And, it's aptly named. There's waterfalls along the whole way. Especially the first half was just like stacked with views. At one point we ran on a ledge behind a waterfall, and then shortly after that went in front of the biggest waterfall in the gorge, which is like over 600 feet.
Oh, wow. Spectacular. So
yeah.
How far ahead of you were you behind the second place finisher?
Second place finished, I want to say 14 minutes behind me, which sounds significant, but that person came from sixth place at around 25, 30 miles. So I knew that I had someone charging behind me, and it made the whole second half pretty interesting.
So you kept going. So, I mean, did you ever stop and just rest, or do you?
I did not. I had, there was aid stations. I guess at one point I pulled out a drop bag that I had sent with the organizers, but otherwise... At the aid stations, I would just grab a bag quickly, swap gear, and keep moving. So it was pretty efficient.
So what's in that gear bag?
So what I would typically do is swap from vest to vest. So I was running with a vest, or a couple times I just grabbed a bottle and would take off the vest for a little bit, which was nice. And that I had those pre-placed, and then I had my girlfriend up there, and she was my crew. So we went over everything. I had notes for her, and I would have my nutrition and hydration there.
Yeah, so what is it that you can eat along the trail?
A lot of sugar. So I was taking in close to 400 calories an hour of basically just gels and sports drink, which is about what the body can handle if you train it well enough. So that's something I work on in training, is how much I can take in. And that is a huge factor. There's no way I could have finished that race with the way I started if I hadn't been taking in that much fuel.
So those gels, I understand from some, really they can be very troublesome on your stomach. You don't find that?
Yeah, again, that's why you have to train it. So lots of times when I'm out in training, if it, you know, if it's a 2-hour workout where I don't necessarily feel like I need it, I still do practice taking in fuel. And I will say that sports nutrition has gotten a lot better in the last few years. So it's a little bit easier to take some of these products down.
So how is it that you actually train for something like this? I mean, you're not going to go out and run 100 kilometers.
Yeah, definitely not. I was trying to hit close to 100 kilometers or a little bit under, like 50 miles a week for about 8 weeks leading up to this on foot, which doesn't account for that many training hours relative to what I typically do. So throughout the winter, I was still on skis a ton with Skimo racing and training, a little bit of Nordic skiing. And as the race got closer, I just picked up the running volume a little bit. But I was I knew going in that I had significant training volume, even though my running wasn't that high. But I was fairly confident it would be just enough running that would be fine, and then the fitness would come into play.
Yeah, certainly skiing, you know, cross-country skiing and running are very different. I mean, it both very aerobic, but at the same time, it's just not that pounding.
Yeah, definitely, and that's where I knew I had to keep running throughout the winter more than I really ever had. But like I said, it was enough. I did one training run of about 50 kilometers, which usually I've found in ultras I've done in the past, if I can hit half the distance in a race or a training run leading up to it, then on race day I can go out and do double.
Yeah, so where do you run in the winter when there's lots of snow on the ground?
Yeah, as a mix. I spent a bit of time on a treadmill on the roads here. I think I did a couple runs just right behind us since roads are a little bit steeper up from Main Street. And then I got down to Salt Lake a few times too, and you know, we're lucky we've got down in Salt Lake, the foothills dry out pretty soon, and even when they're not dry, there's so many people out that things pack out.
Yeah, so as you're running, I mean, do you ever feel like just stopping, or I mean, how do you keep yourself going?
Yeah, I'm usually pretty motivated. I like being out there. I wouldn't do this if I didn't. I think it'd be pretty hard to be any kind of athlete, especially a ultra endurance athlete, if you didn't like spending a lot of time outside. You know, if I had to do all my training inside, it might be a different story, but there's plenty to explore.
Yeah, do you listen to books on tape? Do you listen to music, or you just listen to nature?
A mix. If I listen to anything, it's typically music, because I kind of zone in and out too much for audiobooks when I'm running. And I try to get out with some friends to mix things up as well.
Yeah. So how do you feel right after the race and then maybe 2 days later?
Immediately after the race, I mean, I was pretty excited to have made it to the finish line and for things to come together. But I was also pretty wrecked. It's not the first time where I've been like, I'm going to be more sore from this than I've ever been before. That's how it felt for the first 12 or so hours. And then actually recovery went okay. And I was definitely sore for the majority of the next week, but I was able to keep moving and get the body back in shape.
What hurts, bones or just muscles or everything?
Muscles were sore. Luckily, tendons, ligaments were fine, which is probably due to strength training. My toes got a little banged up just being early season and being a pretty wet race. My feet were wet for a lot of the race, so they still don't look super pretty.
Kind of black toenails, is that what happens?
I'll probably lose a couple.
Yeah, ouch. Okay. And so what, I mean, it's like just something you've learned to love to do. I mean, you raced even skiing, of course, for Nordic skiing for years.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've always identified as an athlete, and I was on the national team for 6 years for Nordic combined, and after that I signed up for a 50K race the first spring that I was done as a Nordic combined athlete, just to try something totally different, put a challenge out there. And I knew it was something I was interested in. I'd been kind of following the sport before I was even doing it, with some family connections to the sport. And then it's definitely been something I've fallen more in love with than I ever expected. And it's just cool. There's so many races out there. There's so many things you can do that aren't races. There's constant inspiration.
So what are you training for next?
Summer ahead, I'll have a little bit of variety. The next race that I'm definitely planning on doing, I might throw something in before then, but at the end of June, I'm going to head to Canada for what's called a sky race, which means it's a shorter distance, but really technical terrain, a lot of verticals. So it's basically a third the distance. It's 33 kilometers, and it's got as much climbing, which is about 10,000 feet, as the 100K that I just did.
Oh, wow. So how do you think you'll do there? Because that's going to be, like you say, shorter, but probably more challenging during the race.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see because it's on the World Sky Running Series. There'll be a pretty good field that comes over for that. It's definitely shorter than I've done recently. But I also tend to move pretty well in technical terrain. So it'll be interesting. I think it's fun to mix things up.
Yeah. How often do you run?
4 to 6 days a week, I'd say. Throughout the winter, once I started really training, usually 4 days was about what I could get in. And as the snow starts to dry up, I bet it'll be closer to 6 days.
There's just something about it that you love, huh?
Yeah, it's just free and simple. And, you know, there's a lot of great things to do around here. Obviously, mountain biking is really popular, and I still enjoy that too. But it's just nice to go out for a run and not have to worry about too much. I don't ever have a flat tire or have to clean up my gear besides maybe wash my shoes off after.
Yeah, right. And how are your knees? I mean, it's like at some point, is it going to just be you're done with it? Or
I hope not. It's certainly a lifelong sport. I actually had some tendonitis in my knees last year. And it's actually still a little bit present. I haven't fully kicked it, but I think it's actually been for the better because since last July, I've been in the gym at least once a week, every single week. And I know that if I don't do that, I will be hurt. So that's some extra motivation to keep me working on strength training, and that keeps me healthy. And also, I think the strength does play a factor in the racing.
Well, again, anything else that you wanted to mention?
No, I think that's all.
Yeah, well, congratulations. Good job.
Thank you. Appreciate
Adam,
it.
Adam, thanks for coming in. That's Adam Lewis, again, who finished first in a 100-kilometer running race known as the Gorge Waterfalls, happening on April 13th. Well, the Park City Institute has added three more acts to its 2024 concerts on the Slopes lineup. Pop duo Ali and AJ will take the stage August 23rd with an electric performance as part of their Vibrant Tour. Then I Love the 90s Tour will take the audience back in time August 30th with performances by All for One, Rob Bass, Tone LC, CMB, and Young MC. Following the 90s, country music star Sarah Evans is set to perform her chart-topping hits August 31st. That'll cap off the summer series. All 11 shows will be at the Canyons Village Mountain Stage in front of the Grand Summit Hotel. Tickets for select shows are available. Later shows will open up later this month. You can visit kpcw.org for the full lineup as well as ticket information. Well, a 20-year-old from Summit County has made it to the top 10 of American Idol. KPCW's Connor Thomas has the latest on Cabrian.
Hennifer native and North Summit High School graduate Cabrian Richens performed Sunday and Monday. First, she sang Joan Jett's I Hate Myself for Loving You. That got her into season 22's top 12. Monday night's number, Wrecking Ball by Miley Cyrus, won Richens a spot in the top 10. This week, singer-songwriter Meghan Trainor coached Richens and her fellow competitors. Judge Lionel Richie sang Richens' praises Monday night.
Meghan gave you the best advice in the world, which is trust your big voice, right? We discovered in that voice a crack. That little crack that you have is now absolutely should be your signature. I love the way that sounded.
Thank you.
And Richens will take the stage again Sunday to compete for a spot in the top 8. Singers will perform songs from the year they were born. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Park City planning officials could grant Deer Valley approval to build a new 6-pack bubble chairlift tonight. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on that.
The proposed lift would connect to the top of Park Peak and offer over 4 miles of new high-elevation beginner trails. The lift's base terminal would be located where the Ontario and Trump runs meet. The project is part of Deer Valley's major expansion, which involves building 10 new lifts and opening a new base along US 40 in Wasatch County by winter 2025-26. The Park City Planning Commission is scheduled to vote on the resort's application at its meeting Wednesday. The other nine expansion lifts are across the Wasatch County line and fall under the jurisdiction of the Military Installation Development Authority, or MIDA. Those lifts have already been approved. The city's planning department is recommending prohibiting fencing and adopting construction requirements to limit the impact on local wildlife. The project area is identified as a crucial wildlife habitat by the Utah Department of Natural Resources. The DNR says several species, including moose, Rocky Mountain elk, and mule deer, make their home there. A public hearing is scheduled for the lift project. On Wednesday, the commission could also approve plans to build a new 6,000-square-foot maintenance building at the Park Meadows Golf Course. The golf course is also proposing to add 20 employee parking spaces. The meeting agenda and a link to attend virtually can be found online at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Wasatch County residents are invited to learn and share feedback about how to improve road safety at an open house today. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has details on that.
This week's event, held by the Mountainlands Association of Governments, is part of a project to reduce crashes causing injury or death in the region. MAG commissioned a traffic study which identified high-risk locations across the Wasatch Back as part of a federal grant called Safe Streets for All. In December, the organization shared the most dangerous roads for crashes and asked residents to fill out a survey to share concerns about dangerous driving behavior and spots they feel least safe. The survey also asked what would make travelers feel safer on the roads. Now, MAG is sharing survey results and inviting more feedback, including an interactive map where people can leave specific comments about changes they'd like to see. The organization will give an update on its traffic safety improvement plans and listen to residents' concerns at the Wasatch County Open House Wednesday afternoon. By June, MAG says it hopes to have a list of initial road safety projects for the Wasatch Back. This week's event is MAG's third open house. Summit and Utah counties both held meetings last week. The event begins at 4:30 p.m. in the Heber Public Safety Building and will go until 6:30. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
The Park City Council opens its work session Thursday with a preview of next year's operating budget. In the studio with more, I have City Manager Matt Dias. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you today?
Good, thank you. So let's just talk quickly, how is budgeting season going without Eric Danis? I know he was pretty instrumental in your budget. Have you been able to replace his position yet?
Yes and no. As you allude to, Eric did spend several years in our budget department, but he had actually transitioned eventually over to the Director of Economic Development and Analytics. We're really fortunate, though, throughout that transition, we have several new hires in the organization. Hans Jespersen, Penny Freitz, made the escalation to Deputy Budget Director. So we have a really strong team. We actually have a new analyst from Goldman Sachs, and it's exciting times. And to be fair, although we miss Eric dearly, he is still supporting the jurisdiction in an analytical component. And we're just excited about the new team members and what they bring.
All right, so next year's operating budget focuses on inflation and the cost of maintaining existing public service levels. It sounds like the ski season was about flat, so the expectation is that income levels will remain about the same?
Yeah, this is sort of the 10th overall budgeting process I've been involved with in the municipality, and my fifth as the manager. I hate to say it this way, it's probably the least interesting. There's not a lot of fodder in here in terms of new positions and new initiatives. Really what we're focused on is covering our inflationary cost increases and then perhaps reorganizing or refocusing some positions to more strategically focus on council direction of complex initiatives, major projects, capital projects, intergovernmental workings, and other things. So if we're going to be exploring Agordo Park and Ride and doing homestake road reconstructions and potentially doing a Bonanza Cultural District, we're going to need sort of supreme level project management that rely on multiple divisions. And so there are a lot of needs in the organization: tuition, supplies, equipment, the price of gasoline, the price of salt, uniforms for our lifeguards and summer camps that are just going up with everything. And then we want to couple that about reprioritizing some internal resources to make sure that we're adequately pursuing council direction.
So that minor reorganization, it happening in all departments?
No, not in all departments. You know, really just sort of probably focusing more on the sort of economic development and housing and sustainability worlds, where there's probably a way of wrapping these together somehow. I don't know if it's either structurally or otherwise, where, you know, if we're just going to take a project, for example, there's likely a land acquisition component, there's a soils testing component, there's a land use and entitlement component, there's likely a public-private partnership that needs to be negotiated. The financial aspects, the analytical aspects, the legal aspects. And so there may be a way to wrap together individuals from multiple divisions where their task is really project-oriented major initiatives. I look at that as something that would be really exciting. As someone who's had some experience working on the Treasure Hill acquisition or the Bonanza Flat acquisition or even the Cultural District land acquisition. Those are really exciting initiatives that involve multiple divisions. And so I think it could be really interesting opportunity for some of our employees, you know, undergrounding the power lines for Rocky Mountain Power, potentially relocating the substation. These are almost decades-long projects that I would find very compelling if I was an employee.
So if you're trying to keep things relatively leveled, does staff get a raise this year?
We are trying to make sure that we take care of our people. Thank you for mentioning that. You know, almost 6.5 out of every dollar that we spend actually goes to the people that are out here plowing your streets. You know, you look out the window this morning, you've got curbs that need to be repainted. Spring is an interesting time to look at this community because you see sort of all of the damage that was done over the winter. So the people that are plowing our streets, that are refereeing our league games and otherwise, we're trying to make sure that we take care of them. But in order to do so, as you recall, we brought in a third-party expert in terms of public employee compensation. So it's one thing, you know, I think for us to take a look at. It's another thing to bring in an outside entity. We used NFP, which is a professional firm that does wages and benefits, and they provided a myriad of recommendations. And one of them is moving our pay plan away from focusing on individual positions and more broader pay bands, where we have probably 10 to 15 positions within a certain pay band. And then you have employees that can see sort of their vertical progression through their compensation over time. So if you're going to hire a new employee with a relatively low skill set, they would come in at the bottom of the pay plan and they'd have the ability to work their way up.
What about health benefits? It looked like at one point you were facing an 18% increase.
Yeah, I think sort of the music between the notes here is that last year we changed our healthcare provider as an entity. We put it out to bid for the first time in 10 years. We decided to sort of, you know, it's time to be more competitive in this game, and we saved approximately $500,000 in a single year. So no surprise overall that when you accrue that big savings one time that you're going to have some escalating cost increases over time. Yeah, at one point with our provider, we were looking at a 20% increase, and we've negotiated it down, I think, a little bit under 10%. But the health insurance plan that we have is probably or arguably one of the most important benefits that we can provide to our employees, especially when they're sick or their loved ones are sick.
And then you've also set aside $1 million just for a merit bonus program that would be on top of any raise?
Yeah, so that would be applied sort of conceptually, that's applied to the pay plan. That's applied to the pay bands. That's not necessarily applied directly to the individual. If I, you know, by way of an example, if we have 20 employees that are in a specific pay band, they will be compensated at different rates, and we're just sort of funding that pay band.
All right. There were also some one-time expenses that the council will be looking at. $15,000 for an Olympic party announcement. That's quite a party.
I guess, although if you think about what things cost in this town, and the amount of work that goes into a special event, whether it's audio, visual, technical, whether we need a stage and risers and food and beverage and fire pits. I believe it was 2022 was the last time we had an Olympic celebration out here in the Bob Wells Plaza. We had music, we had a band, we brought out all of the old flags that we have as a municipality and banners. And so we have a huge opportunity potentially this summer. with the hopeful announcement of securing the 2034 games. And so we're putting in an allocation where we could put the special events division on formulating a community event, sort of a local event to celebrate potentially the announcement. Now, clearly we'd have to work with the state entity and the convening committee, but we wanted to make sure that we had the resources. We didn't want the community to wake up in July, have this wonderful announcement and say, wait, we're not celebrating this?
You're also asking for a $10,000 increase in the Park City Leadership Program. Is that for the new director?
No, that's just overall cost. Believe it or not, like everything else, you know, the leadership program requires a myriad of things. Room reservations, we give per diems to many of the speakers that we bring in. We often will bus the class, you know, to Colville, to the county courthouse, or down to the state capitol. And all of those expenses across the board have increased with inflation.
All right. Also, some new requests. Another $87,000 for lobbyists. That's like for what? A year-round full-time position?
Well, so if you recall, we have three different sort of lobby levels of lobbyists for the entity. We have a federal team, and we sort of have two state teams, or 1.5 state teams. And so, like most things, those contracts have gone up over time. I believe they were 3 to 5 year contracts. About 6 months ago, we put out a request for proposals and had a renewal process, and we were fortunate to secure the same teams that we were working with, but their costs went up about 10%.
$50,000 will be set aside for Olympic planning, just nothing specific at this point?
No, really just an effort for, I think, the team and the mayor and council and the organization to look ahead. As we were just talking about the Olympics, there are going to be numerous initiatives coming up, hopefully, over the next several years where we're going to have to be hosting or doing studies or part of an intergovernmental committee or otherwise where there will be just logical expenditures to ensure Park City's participation. And then we've also been advised, to be fair, we've been advised by some of our elders in this community that we would be wise to begin building a balance over time. In the event that we are 10 years out, I think the organization should consider building a balance, and we're just getting started.
All right. Later on, the council will be discussing the transportation funding for some capital projects, three significant projects under construction, the Snow Creek Crossing, Homestake Roadway construction, and the Lower Park Avenue reconstruction. It sounds like none of those happening this year.
So none of the overall construction will occur this year. To take a step back, three huge projects, capital projects potentially, all very, very expensive. And to be fair, in an environment with limited resources, they are competing with each other. And so I think we're having a prioritization discussion with the mayor and council before moving into further design and spending any more money on, you know, where utilities are in the right of way or how wide the sidewalks might be. We really want to prioritize things. And so there will be some work occurring in the Homestake area in the Bonanza District this summer, though, however, because that's sort of that's an investment zone for us. That's a redevelopment zone, and we're going to be trying to create some additional connectivity and pathways and the hope of doing a full street reconstruction project there. It should concur well or coincide well with the Engine House, the affordable housing private partnership that the city conducted in that area. But also we've got big decisions to make on a potential tunnel. And the Lower Park Ave reconstruction project that we've always contemplated. Both of those projects are now, I think, almost $18 million individually.
Yeah. Let's talk first the Homestake Road. We're talking between Kearns Boulevard and Park Avenue. The plan is for a wider roadway as well as wider sidewalks. Of course, we've got, besides the Engine House, we've got the Homestake and the Claim Jumper condominiums. We've got lots of parking on the side of the road. Will people be able to continue to park there?
Well, I think, yeah, we will continue to manage the public right-of-way that appropriately allocates that resource for the benefit of our residents and visitors to that area and small businesses and otherwise. But what we are contemplating is a complete street overhaul. This will be, a far more accessible environment to a pedestrian, someone going to school in that area or walking to a local business or biking to a local business. It will accommodate some on-street parking. It will likely include a permit parking program and otherwise. But this is sort of modernizing that area, enhancing its safety elements, and really putting in a complete street that we can be proud of with new lighting and new trees. We have the opportunity for banners in that area. So it really is a reinvestment zone for us.
All right, then the Snow Creek Crossing. This has been known for years as the Dans de Jans, first proposed back, what, some 14 years ago. We're talking about kind of a three-opening tunnel. As you mentioned, we're talking about a $17 million project. Just lots of concern over the utilities in the area and the cost. So can UDOT help with the cost here at all? Or
I don't know if UDOT will be a big financial partner on the actual cost of a tunnel. However, they're an incredibly important partner with the signalization, the right-of-way, constructing in their right-of-way. As you know, the facility is owned, operated, and maintained by UDOT. So we work very, very closely with them. We're very fortunate, though, there's a potential to work with Summit County and some of the transportation funding that they have through some special grant programs. But there's a little bit of a chicken or an egg problem occurring here, where I think we all know there's a connectivity issue, and you're sort of coming into the community sort of north-south, let's just call it the approximate way. Let's say you're coming in from the junction and you're using McLeod Creek Trail, those other trails, and you sort of get to that Kearns Junction. It's a little bit of a no man's land, and we want to make some improvements there. However, this entire area is potentially undergoing, let's say the next decade, a major redevelopment. We've had applications for the Yarrow, and we have the Bonanza Cultural District. We're also redoing the bus stops in front of Fresh Market. And so I think there's a bit of a quandary about when we do this project, not if. I think it's really when is the right time? Are we adequately taking advantage of the other redevelopments in the area? And so this is a tough public policy decision, because the longer we wait, the more expensive it gets, and the longer this sort of impasse is there for pedestrians and cyclists. However, there may be an opportunity to partner with the private sector as this area redevelops to make whatever occurs there even more compelling.
Well, there's some talk maybe instead of tunneling, just doing some at-grade options, which would include a hawk signal like we have there on Park Avenue in front of Fresh Market, or these refugee islands with crosswalks there at the intersection of Snow Creek and Kearns. But what about option three? Why not just build a bridge? That's cheap. Cheaper.
Bridges are not cheap. It may be nominally cheaper, but they visually they can be very intrusive. And that doesn't mean you can't build a very expensive bridge that isn't aesthetically more pleasing. But bridges are also very, very expensive. We were contemplating bridges, 6 or 7 years ago when we were looking at the Bonanza District. And so we could consider something like that, but I think that was eliminated in a previous process. I think the tunnels were deemed far more safer. And then you've mentioned the at-grade crossing. So maybe there's an incremental solution. I alluded to the fact of a chicken or egg, and this is really a timing thing. So maybe there is an incremental solution with an at-grade crossing that we should pursue prior to the expensive tunnel. Now, that's a public policy decision for the mayor and council. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, and it's obviously a very complex and expensive endeavor that would be a fair amount of construction disruption as well. We know that's a congested corridor.
And then the Lower Park Avenue plan, this was supposed to start this year. It was pushed back so that we could do the Main Street Waterline project instead. Again, another $17 million project, a two-construction season that, you know, the staff report says will not improve traffic or congestion. So some talk about maybe doing away with it?
Maybe. I think that the real question here is, you know, that corridor is functioning fairly well, given some of the pilot program and testing we've done of street repainting and putting planters in the right of way and additional crosswalks. I don't believe the elements that we're considering would be a big improvement for traffic and congestion. And we worry there's a quandary that the community will ask, you know, was it worth the investment? Now, if you're living on that street or you live in that neighborhood, it would absolutely probably be a worthy investment, because it would be a neighborhood betterment project. And so council and the mayor have this difficult decision to make, valuing the capital investment, what are its impacts on traffic and congestion, and then what are the impacts on the neighborhood? We clearly have a park and a hospital and a library and all of these elements there. And so I believe there's actually three proposals in the report. One is just live within our means. We have roughly $8.5 million allocated already, and do the best that we can. Two is sort of the medium element, which would be a $12 million project, which likely widens some of the sidewalks there. They can get very congested at peak periods and maybe do some raised crosswalks and otherwise. And three is the $17 million option. And so I don't envy the mayor and council here. This is a tough decision for them to make. And clearly there's a timing issue too, because of the Main Street Water Project. It'd be very difficult for our public utilities team to do Main Street and Lower Park Ave concurrently.
Okay, and finally, just wanted to mention that you'll be getting an update from the special event team and transit and parking rates. It sounds like the plan is to beef up transit coming from Richardson Flat during special events and then charge more for parking here in the downtown area.
Yeah, trying to walk the walk. If we can intercept visitors that are interested in participating in these events in our community with sort of this express level service to Main Street, by all means, I think we're willing to make those investments, and obviously we need resources to pay for them. What we've learned, though, is by and large, the parking infrastructure in terms of China Bridge and some of the surface lots, they really only fill up during special events. They are, by far and away, they lack actually adequate capacity. I'd say almost 90% of the time, it's really Sundays during Park Silly and other special events when they reach capacity. There are a few weekends during the year when they reach capacity as well. And so pricing has not really been a deterrent for people driving into town, and we're trying to provide people with a viable alternative so we can help reduce the traffic and congestion.
Well, parking is free in China Bridge, and it's through June 30th. So what about Silly Sunday? You'll start charging for parking when it starts mid-June?
Well, there's an interesting concept in here, too, that we would potentially, even on a paid parking day, let's say on a Sunday for Park Silly, when the market is over, the event is over, there's an interesting concept here where our special events and economic team is saying, maybe what we do is we actually just throw the parking rates out the window for a couple hours afterwards or the rest of the night, and we really try to draw the residents and locals back to Main Street. So it's an interesting concept that when we know we have a big event, we provide express level service, trying to intercept people before they get into town. And then having a neat sort of after effect where we're saying, okay, we had this wonderful event. Maybe we can keep locals and keep residents on Main Street or even attract them there in sort of these after hours when things are a little slower. So trying to balance the needs here of these competing interests at any time.
Okay. Just wanted to note also that Council will be getting an update on the bus stop improvements. When does the one in front of Fresh Market finally get done?
This spring. My hope is this spring. I believe there's even some initial site work being conducted, like sort of as we're doing this interview. The actual bus stops have been fabricated. I believe they're somewhere in the Midwest, actually kind of being loaded onto a trailer and moved across the country as we speak. And then there will be some additional site work and concrete work. But we hope at least by midsummer, if not June, that we will have new transit stations out there in front of the Fresh Market on both sides of the street.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
That's it, Leslie. Thanks so much.
All right.
We appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt. That's Park City Manager Matt Dias. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. And on the phone now with a preview of some of the upcoming screenings coming to Jim Santee Auditorium, I have the Executive Director of Park City Film, Katie Wang. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Leslie. Great to be here.
Yeah. So let's start with the free film that's tomorrow, In the Dirt.
Yes. Yeah, we're really excited about this film. We're partnering with Swanner Preserve and Eco Center for Earth Day. And this is a short film about a former pro cyclist and a group of Native American bike enthusiasts who brought hope and healing to the young people of the Navajo Nation through the introduction of mountain biking. And it's kind of this interesting storyline in that the bike kind of becomes the modern day horse, if you will, of just how do you get out into the outdoors and appreciate this enormous amount of land that is part of the Navajo Nation and kind of reconnect to the land. Obviously, the sport of mountain biking, you know, helps kind of mental health, physical health, all of these things. But it's really this very hopeful, very inspiring film. We'll have a great panel discussion afterwards. Scott Nidham, who's the founder of Silver Stallion and one of the film subjects, will be here. Jose Chacon from Park City Community Foundation, Ashley Cleveland, who's outdoor auntie, and then Donna McAleer with the Bicycle Collective will moderate. So it's a free film, shorter film, it's about 40 minutes, and a great conversation afterwards about just, you know, getting people into the outdoors, looking at underrepresented communities, and certainly this great example of what's going on in the Navajo Nation. So that'll be a great film that we hope folks come out for. And then we've got kind of an epic this weekend, which I'm super excited about. For all you film enthusiasts out there, we're bringing in Dune Part 2. So this is the second installment of Frank Herbert's classic story, where, of course, Paul Atreides, played by Timothy Chalamet, unites with a Freeman to seek revenge for the death of his family and prevent a terrible future that only he can foresee. So just one of those films that you absolutely need to see on the big screen. You know, there's a lot of stories about Dune and the original iteration of the movie version of it, and of course the books, but just for us, kind of a classic film to be able to bring into our theater is a lot of fun.
Do you have seen part one to make this part two make sense?
Not really. If you know the story, I mean, I think just even reading the summary, part one was such a, it's interesting that part one was just kind of the prelude. I mean, even though it was 3 hours long, it was really just kind of setting up the scene of, you know, here's this kind of family that's been displaced, the House of Atreides, going to this dune planet, and then kind of being basically all slaughtered, and Paul being the Messiah. He's going to, you know, help everyone in this planet, hopefully, that's the idea, you know, realize a better future. So there's a little bit of the storyline that you might need to just kind of, you know, brush up on before you go into it. But so much of the story of that first book happens in this second sequence. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting how they set that up, even though they're, you know, full-length films. Most of the action, and everyone has been loving the second film. So if you saw the first one and you were like, oh, that was interesting, the second one is way better, way more detailed in terms of storyline and kind of where it goes and setting you up for, you know, subsequent films. I think there's 5 books in the series. So it'll be interesting to see how many films they actually put together for this. So a little bit like Lord of the Rings, and that you've got this epic that's kind of building on itself.
Okay, what else?
So then we've got a couple of free screenings in May, as well as some, of course, our weekend screenings. But on May 2nd, we're coming back with a free screening. We're partnering with the Friends of the Children's Justice Center to bring in a film called Broken Trust. And this is part of our Raising Voices film series. And it's a documentary about sexual and emotional abuse experienced by athletes. And the film looks at the systemic and societal forces that enable these abuses to happen, but also what athletes are doing to basically fight back and change that system. So great conversation with the Summit County Attorney's Office, Prevent Child Abuse Utah, one of the associate producers on the film, who's also an Olympian, and then Mountain Mediation. So we'll have the film, another short film, a panel discussion afterwards, and then Mountain Mediation will come in and facilitate some small group conversations. So really kind of a deep dive into, you know, what's going on, how can we prevent this from happening in our community here in Park City, and, you know, keep our children safe, keep our athletes safe. So that'll be a free screening at 7 o'clock. Then we have our weekend film, Little Levity here, a mystery comedy based on a true story about, it's called Wicked Little Letters. And it's about these wicked letters that were filled with hilarious profanities that mysteriously started appearing in a small English village. So Olivia Coleman and Jesse Buckley are in that one. Then we're partnering with the United Jewish Federation of Utah to bring in a documentary called A Tree of Life. And this is about the 2018 shooting in the Pittsburgh synagogue that ended up being the deadliest, or is, you know, noted as the deadliest anti-Semitic attack in American history. So the film is a portrait of the victims as well as the survivors and family members, and we'll have a post-film panel discussion with one of the survivors of the shooting, and just talk about lessons that can be learned from this tragedy. How do we keep our community safe? Then we have a great foreign film from Macedonia called Housekeeping for Beginners that explores unconventional family ties, both the bonds that we inherit and those we create, as well as a, this is the weekend of May 10th, as well as a free film screening of Belle and Sebastian for our Family Film Fest series, which is a great film about a young boy and his giant sheepdog in World War II who have adventures in the French Alps. So kind of a little something for everyone. We're rolling into the end of our season, but you go to parkcityfilm.org, check out all the films, reserve tickets or purchase tickets, depending on what the screening is. But we're looking into kind of rounding out on a high note and then entering into our summer season. And we've got a lot of fun stuff planned for that too.
Okay, when do you wrap up for the summer?
So our last weekend screening will be the weekend of June 7th. So just we time that usually with when school ends. And then we have a Studio Ghibli Film Fest coming in. So we'll have 7 films from Hayao Miyazaki throughout the summer, and some great speakers coming in from different parts of the country, some noted experts in the field of Japanese anime. We'll partner with Latino Arts Fest and bring a great film about a Brazilian surfer, and then we'll have some pop-up outdoor screenings. So kind of smattered around, but a change-up from, you know, our regular weekend series, and then, of course, back after Labor Day.
Okay. Katie, anything else?
No, yes, I do have one other thing. Thank you for asking. We are doing an audience survey until April 28th. So if you like what we do, or if you have comments, we want to hear them. So you can go to our Facebook page. It's pinned to the top. You can click on that. It's also on our website. But the audience survey closes April 28th. And as a thank you for your time, it'll take about 10 minutes to fill out. We'll give you a free bowl of popcorn. So there's an incentive. Best bowl of popcorn in town. And let us know what you think. How can we improve our programming? How can we increase our impact? We definitely want to hear. We're here for the community, and we want to hear how we can do what we do better.
So, okay. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Katie Wang is the executive director of Park City Film. You're listening to KPCW Park City. Well, if you're thinking about getting a new bike this year or you already have one, the annual Park City Bike Swap is an option to sell your own bike. The bike swap attracts throngs of cyclists every year. Eager bargain hunters stand in the cold for hours early Saturday morning to get the first chance to scour the inventory. The Park City High School mountain bike team hosts the swap. Head coach Pete Stoughton says the team keeps a portion of the bike sales to support their program.
We take 20%. We cover our costs of running the program and running the bike swap. And we're really grateful, though, that the Utah Film Studios is donating the space. And so that's a real big cost offset. But we do fundraise for our scholarship riders, for maintaining our low program fees, and the other kind of costs associated with a 240-person team.
He hopes to raise at least $10,000 over the two-day sale. The swap collects all bikes in working condition, gently used equipment and clothing, including bike trailers, bike racks, shoes, and accessories. Helmets may be sold, but they must be brand new. He suggests to get the best price, sellers clean their bikes and make sure that everything works.
No one wants to buy a dirty bike or sell it according to the condition that it's in. A lot of us, especially myself, have an affinity for our bikes, but sometimes others may not appreciate it to the same extent. So pricing it ready to sell is really important. We also have a high price and a low price, so people can sell it on Saturday for their high price, and then all items typically go down in price on Sunday because people don't want to pick up their goods. They want to actually sell it.
For those with equipment to sell, they can start the check-in process at home. You can find the link online at kpcw.org and then drop off the items at the Utah Film Studio at Quinn's Junction Wednesday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. The bike swap will be open Saturday 8 to 5, Sunday 11 to 3. There is no entry fee. If an item doesn't sell, it must be picked up Sunday between 3 and 5.